I want to thank everyone today for tuning in to Family Times Magazine podcast. I have a very special guest with me today, RJ Jenkins, and he is here representing the Marion County Literacy Council. RJ, you're acting executive director, is that correct?
Yes, okay. I am acting executive director.
All right, fantastic. So that's how we're going to recognize you today.
Yeah, I'm the president of the board of directors, which is my primary role. And then our executive director moved on and sort of during the pandemic, and we didn't really feel comfortable rehiring for that role right away. And so I've taken on the core responsibilities of that role for just a little while.
Okay, fantastic. So tell us about your background, your professional background, and what ultimately led you to your position with the Marion County Literacy Council.
Sure. So I came to Ocala almost 5 years ago after pursuing my education in the Northeast. I did my undergraduate degree in New York City at Columbia. I did my master's degree over in the UK at Cambridge.
Wow.
And then I pursued doctoral work at Harvard. And that's where I met my partner. We moved to New York, and then we ultimately ended up coming back home. He's from here, born and raised here. So I came with him, and that was a big transition.
Wow.
And my field is literature. So I've always been drawn to books. Reading is a super, super big part of my life. And so I very quickly tried to figure out what could I do here that would connect me to that activity. And I met Summer Gill at the Literacy Council, and she encouraged me to volunteer my time teaching folks how to speak English. And that's how I got connected to the Literacy Council and have sort of increased my involvement from there.
Wow. I had no idea how diverse your background is.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of time at school.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. And my first job, actually, I returned to my alma mater to become a dean of students at Columbia. And so, and I still work there, actually. My day job, I work for the Columbia Center for Veteran Transition and Integration, and I build online tools that help vets succeed in school. So education, whether it's educating vets and helping them use their yellow ribbon benefits to sort of succeed in college, or helping to empower adults in our community through education. I mean, education is my heart. And so that's kind of why these activities stack up in that way.
I can't believe you've only been in Ocala for 5 years. I feel like you've been here forever.
Yeah. I mean, it you know, it's funny. I had a healthy suspicion of Ocala when I came. It was so different from where I had spent most of my young adulthood. And I have absolutely fallen in love with Ocala. It's just an extraordinary place. I'm super evangelical about it. And I haven't ever really interacted with a community that is as loving and as giving as this one is. So I'm super pumped to be here and to be engaging in the community.
We're pretty great. And we love when people move here and they really experience it and they fall in love and become an advocate for our community. Having been from here myself, you know, obviously I'm pretty sold on Ocala. But when people move here, it's risky because you don't know where they're from and what they're going to think about Ocala, the pace of Ocala, and the culture of Ocala. And I, for one, have watched it grow and progress so beautifully over my lifetime.
Yeah.
And so when other people advocate for it, it makes me very happy.
Yeah, it's been exciting. I mean, as I told you, education is important to me, and it's been an education for me to be here. You know, I spent most of my young adulthood in places that were very different from here. And I came to Ocala having a lot of thoughts and opinions and beliefs that I felt were absolutely the right ones. And I've had to revisit some of those in ways that have been really productive for me. So I it's been humbling, and it's been really, really cool.
So tell us about the Marion County Literacy Council and how it serves this community.
Sure. So this organization was founded in 1999 by a woman who saw a need in the community for sort of just basic literacy skills. So this data is a little outdated. We're hoping to get some better data with the new census, but by our best approximations, about 1 in 5 adults in Marion County can't read above a fourth grade level, which is pretty kind of a pretty shocking statistic. Now, that doesn't mean that these folks don't know their ABCs. It doesn't mean that they can't write their name. But what it means is that when it comes time to do anything that's even remotely difficult in writing or in speech, they struggle. So that could be reading a prescription. That could be trying to discern the amendments during an election year, right? I mean, those are hard for me. I don't know.
Yeah, they're hard for me.
They're hard, right? So that's sort of, there's the literacy piece, which is I can't read and write. And then there's the functional literacy piece, which means that you're being held back in some way because you're not able to read above a certain level. And at that functional literacy piece, we have about 20% of our population that struggles there. And then we also have, obviously, a significant portion of our population that hasn't earned their high school diploma diploma or their GED. So they may have some sort of ceiling professionally that they're having trouble getting past. And folks who come to our community who are not capable or confident speakers of the English language.
Right.
A lot of new immigrants. We're an equestrian community. We're an agricultural community. And we have a lot of folks who work really hard in our community who want to improve mm-hmm. that skill to build better, happier lives for themselves and their families. So that's what we do at the Literacy Council. Mm-hmm. We have three programs, adult basic education, teaching folks to read and write. We have our GED program that helps people earn that certification and get their high school diploma. And then our ESOL program, English for Speakers of Other Languages. And that's not just our Spanish speakers, but folks from all over the world come to become more confident speakers of English.
Wow. I'm glad that you clarified for us the difference between being completely illiterate and right. just having a limited capacity or proficiency for reading, because I think a lot of people probably have that misconception. I know right. at one time I did. I thought, right. okay, if someone's illiterate, that means they literally cannot read. They don't right. know phonics, ABCs.
Right.
And just in doing my own research to try and really grasp, because I had heard those statistics, it was probably a few years ago. Yeah. I had gone to a fundraiser
yeah.
and each table had a different statistic mm. on the table about literacy
yeah.
in our community. And I just was blown away by that.
Right.
And so when I kind of poured myself into figuring out what's really going on here, it helped me better understand that there are people who can read.
Right.
They can read.
Right.
But when it comes time, like you said, to discern really critical information,
yep.
they're left out.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine, I guess we take for granted every day being able to pick something up, especially now, right, where so much is digital. So
that's
we're
right.
reading a lot of things.
That's right.
And they're missing so much.
That's right. And I think, too, you know, the thing about this issue that's different from some other issues is it's really hard to see it.
Yes.
It's a really invisible plague in our community, right? So especially low literacy as opposed to illiteracy, we kind of understand. Mm-hmm. And we have this sort of Disney picture that it's a person who marks an X for their signature type situation, right?
Right?
That's actually a really small part of the low literacy issue, because mm-hmm. those folks are out there and they're trying their best to make ends meet. And a lot of times they're not pursuing opportunities right. because they're afraid to be exposed. They're not putting themselves out there because they're afraid to be mm-hmm. seen. There's so much stigma around this issue. It doesn't mean that people can't live healthy and productive lives, but we know that there's lost opportunity for folks who just aren't confident mm-hmm. when they read and write.
I'm glad you brought that up. I actually had that as one of the questions for you. What I have written down here is basically that these challenges aren't something that you see. Just like right. you said, it's an invisible plague where we can see crime issues that are happening in our community. We can sure. see environmental issues like litter being a problem.
Yep.
And even some of the small business things that are happening with having underemployment or having yep. to flex schedules. We can see these things and feel these things.
Right.
But I don't know the last time I was in a situation where I knew or I saw or recognized that someone was struggling with their proficiency.
Sure.
And so it's hard to help something that you don't see or that you don't know about.
That's exactly right. And I think one of the things we're really up against at the Literacy Council is it's really hard to get to the folks who need the help mm-hmm. because of the stigma. Now, what I'll say, the other side of that is, I always say this to donors and to folks who are learning about our organization, there's this invisible filter on our front doors for courage mm-hmm. because the folks who come to us, the first thing we understand about them is that they have courage.
Right.
In fact, I just met with a student literally yesterday who's coming to pursue his GED. He's a successful person in our community, and he dropped his daughter off at an event at the council 2 years ago, picked up one of our cards, put it on his dashboard, and it has been there for 2 years.
Wow.
And it took him that long to take a deep breath and walk through the doors. Sure. So, you know, that's really cool that we know that everyone who comes has courage. And we have the most courageous and aspiring students that I've mm-hmm. seen anywhere. And I've worked at some pretty cool schools.
Right.
And I've never seen this kind of work ethic or the ferocity of aspiration from these folks. The flip side of that is it takes a lot of courage to walk in the doors.
Right.
So the things that makes our students so special can also create a barrier for folks who could really use the help.
Yeah. I can't even imagine, I guess, myself, especially if you are someone who's involved and active in the community, to be recognized in one light and then have to kind of be transparent and honest and say to other people who you know are well connected,
right,
hey, I have this challenge.
Yeah.
I really need some help.
Right.
And so very commendable for those people to step in and say, let's get me some help so that I can take my life to the next level.
Yeah.
And set the example for other people who are afraid to do the very same thing.
That's right. I mean, just asking for help is its own sort of stigma, I think, sometimes. You know, people often understand asking for help as a sign of weakness.
Right.
Or as a sort of confession of failure, whatever it is. And as a lifelong teacher, that one of the things I try to sort of ingrain in my students is that asking for help is just part of what successful and happy folks do,
right?
And in a weird way, we're comfortable asking for certain forms of it, and then we're very, very nervous to ask for other forms of it. In addition to trying to teach people how to read and write and earn their GED, we're also slowly trying to build a kind of army of folks who are prepared to go into the community and say, I've received this kind of help, and this is what has happened as a result.
Right.
And those success stories are what make you open the doors every day.
Are there any success stories that stand out to you that you can share?
We recently had a gentleman in town who his son had dropped out of high school and came to us to complete his GED because he really wanted to go to college, but due to some extenuating circumstances, he didn't feel comfortable completing it in the public schools here. And we have wonderful public schools and dedicated teachers, but sometimes there's not a fit. And in order to encourage his son to complete the GED, the father said, if you do yours, I'll do mine.
Wow.
And awesome. So they actually completed their GEDs together, which was really cool. And even recently, I'm working with a gentleman who does custodial work at a local company, and his company has sponsored him to come do his GED with us. And he chose to do the social studies portion of the GED first because it was the one that was the most intimidating to him.
Wow.
And he passed it 2 weeks ago with a tremendous score, I might add. He didn't just squeak by. And I said, what is it that you learned, you know, about American history? And he goes, I learned it's really complicated. And I thought, that is the coolest.
He got it.
Like, you actually got it. Exactly. Got it. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, but we have folks all the time who the moment they earn their credential or, you know, the moment they sort of exceed to a particular place, they get promoted at work.
Yes.
You know, they're able to find the job that they've been hoping to find. We just placed a woman in the Marion County Public School Systems who came from another part of the world with a PhD from that part of the world, came here. We didn't recognize that degree, right? And she has been able through us to sort of find a home in our school system. So, I mean, there are just some really cool things that go on.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really the key to unlock a whole new world of possibilities for these people.
Right.
I had written down some statistics I saw online. Now, granted, these are kind of national. I know they're not completely specific to the county. And some of these may even be outdated at this point. Like you said, we're still waiting on some census information. But I was most shocked when it talked about students who don't read proficiently by the third grade are 4 times likelier to drop out of school.
Yep.
That is killer to me. And then 2/3 of students who cannot read proficiently by the end of their 4th grade year will end up in jail or on welfare.
It's unbelievable. So this
breaks my heart.
I'm so glad you bring this up because there are 2 things I want to say about this. And it is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And we talked about the invisible nature of literacy, right? Low literacy. But the other thing that it is it sits at the very center of so many other social ills, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have low literacy, you're more likely to be in jail. If you have low literacy, you're more likely to need economic assistance. You're less likely to be civically engaged. Mm-hmm. Your actual physical health outcomes are often lower with low literacy.
Right.
So there's all of these other things that come out of this. And what I want to add one statistic to the one that the ones that you've read, because you immediately see how intergenerational this is. The number one indicator of a child's success in school, K through 12, is the literacy level of the mother. So in other words, these children that aren't reading at a certain level by grade 4, there's a pretty good chance that that problem extends beyond them.
Sure.
So we're very, very focused, I think, rightly on child literacy, but it's very difficult to address child literacy if you're not also addressing adult literacy.
Right. I think there's this belief that reading just happens kind of naturally.
Right.
When I started thinking about you coming for this podcast and just literacy in general, and I really started to trace back, so where did I just learn to read? I mean, it's like it's a magical, we just kind of assume it's going to happen because it just does.
Because it just does.
But in so many cases, it just doesn't.
That's exactly right.
Then this person becomes an adult, and you know, I was just thinking to myself, especially with COVID and how much information was pushed to us, even in the way of having where we could get help and assistance,
yep.
how we could stay safe, where we could go if we were feeling ill. And I thought, I wonder how many people needed those resources but missed out on them because they just could not understand the information that they were given.
That's right. And then you end up with this sort of compacted or, right. you know, you end up with sort of effects that accumulate mm-hmm. over time. And if sort of the sort of the literacy building blocks are the foundation, and when they're right. weak, it's so hard for other things to happen. I mean, I say this to my students all the time, and I used to say it to my students at Harvard, and now I say it to my students at the Literacy Council, which is life happens in language.
Right.
Right. Nothing. Right. Nothing. I mean, our business relationships happen in language. We raise our children in language. Our marriages happen in language. Right. So if that thing that makes up every other thing is a thing that you're uncomfortable with,
right.
then you're in for a world of hurt. Mm-hmm. Right. Because everything happens in language. There's nothing outside of it. So for me, and I, again, I know this is a passion of mine, but you know, I talked to Carla Grimsley at Interfaith, and we talk about homelessness and again, how visible a problem that is.
Right.
And Carla's like, I've got tremendous literacy issues, you know, and it's hard to even know, is it the literacy that leads to the homelessness? In some cases, it's a real contributing factor,
yeah,
right?
Makes sense.
Or, think of basically any other, again, social ill. It's almost always playing a role. And
right.
so I think it's a one way to really try to, you can address several issues by addressing the one.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what does it take for the council to be successful? Are you grant funded, state funded? Do you depend solely on the contributions of people in the community?
So we are, we have several funding streams.
Okay.
We're a really lean organization. And one of my strategic priorities in this role is to try to grow our capacity because we're small. So we right now have a single full-time employee. We have me operating as board president and currently, you know, managing the functions of an ED. We have a wonderful volunteer board. Mm-hmm. And then we teach every single student with an all-volunteer teacher corps.
Okay.
So that means that when people donate to the Literacy Council, their dollars are going directly to service for people in our community. And that's a really cool thing. But we get some state funding, we get some grant funding, and then we really rely on the generosity of this community, and they're extraordinary. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're just gearing up for one of our signature fundraisers, Kiss the Horse, on May 27th. But that's kind of how we work. And my goal is to try to grow us this year and try to see if we can build capacity because I see everywhere I look
right.
opportunities to serve folks.
I think about this pandemic and how people have been separated and isolated. And I'm thinking about the people who depend solely on the interactions of others to be able to function
yeah.
and even just have their basic needs met
yeah.
and how this pandemic, we think about the pandemic in a different light than someone who can't, you know, read or write, or at least the basics to be able to survive.
Yeah.
And that's so sad that even inside of this isolation, that challenge is compounding
that's right.
on top of other things.
That's right.
It is just so sad.
The pandemic brought a lot of things to light. And, you know, one of the things we really struggled with, and this never occurred to me because it just didn't. Mm-hmm. We said, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to offer our services remotely. That's an exciting idea. We haven't done that before.
Sure.
And we did some really cool virtual work, but lo and behold, Kelly, it turns out that the people who are struggling with low literacy often don't have access to technology.
Right.
So again,
wow.
it's really, really hard. I always sort of laugh when we look at our politicians or we look at our local leaders and when we sit on our couch with a glass of wine and say that problem would be easy to solve. I haven't met a problem that's easy to solve in
You're
my
right.
entire life.
You're right.
These problems are thorny. Mm-hmm. They're tricky. They're persistent. They're often intergenerational. There's often multiple problems wrapped up in one problem. And so, you know, it just takes, I mean, the work of this kind of help is really, it's about moving earth,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it's about putting in the time. It's about building relationships. And this has been a hard 14 months for
right.
all of us, but it hasn't been equally hard for everybody.
Right. And I'm thinking about the dynamic of students and teachers. I can only presume that teachers recognize very quickly when they have students who are having literacy issues.
Yeah.
When students are not in the classroom and some of those issues are flying under the radar, they just continue to go along without any kind of attention or help. How do teachers play a role in helping identify literacy?
I mean, you know, our teachers are the front mm-hmm. line for this work, and they do an excellent job, and they've had to do it under increasingly challenging circumstances right. this past year. I think our public school system does a really good job of offering additional support services for students who need, I hate the word remedial, but I'm going to use it for ease of sure. use here. I don't think that learning to read is remedial. I think it's empowering. But folks who need those sort of additional layers of support, they're usually able to get it. I think, again, the problem, Kelly, is that once you start to fall behind, it's this kind of vicious cycle, because the other thing we know from work on mindset is that once a student or a person perceives themselves to be bad at reading, mm-hmm. reading becomes less pleasant.
Right.
And we don't rush to do unpleasant tasks, right? Sure. So it turns out that the way that we think about ourselves as a reader or as a piano player or as a soccer player, whatever it is, mm-hmm. the way we imagine ourselves to be relative to a particular thing affects our ability to do that thing.
Right.
So much of the work of literacy is convincing people that they can. This young man who just passed his social studies GED, one of his greatest gifts is he was convinced he could. And that's half the battle.
Right.
You know?
I think being encouraging in that regard is a superpower.
Yeah.
It truly, truly is.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to have you here today to talk about it, because through Family Times Magazine, I've had the honor of being able to work with so many organizations and really get to know in great depth what they do, how they benefit the community. And I'm always interested when I bring some of these organizations up to other people that they'll kind of take a pause and think, oh, we have that?
Sure.
Or we don't have an issue like that in Marion County.
Right.
And so I love being able to learn about and be coached on these organizations so that I can then kind of be a vehicle of information for those things. It's been great to be able to step in and teach other people about the Literacy Council. Not that I know all the ins and outs.
Sure.
Today's
sure.
been very helpful, of course, but just so that people know it exists or that the problem in Marion County exists.
Right.
There's so much denial. And I think, like you said earlier, there's no problem that's really easy to fix.
Right, right.
But I think we have some problems that are easy to disregard.
100%. Right. And you know, it's funny, like I never want to, you know, I love Ocala and Marion County, and I sometimes feel like there are people in the community who are always nervous about this statistic, that I'm out here peddling this statistic mm-hmm. about low literacy. That's not to cast an aspersion at this community at all.
Right.
But I think we're better than this.
Absolutely.
I think that we are better than 20% of our residents with low literacy. I know we are.
Right.
I know that we are. And that's why, you know, the support of the Literacy Council from the community is awesome. But I agree with you. A lot of this stuff is sort of easy to disregard. The other thing I'll tell you is that I'm so appreciative of what your magazine does, what your publication does to shed light on these issues, because when people do know about us, it really helps. Almost every single student that we receive comes from a referral of a friend or a family wow. member or a colleague. So very few folks just decide one day they're going to walk in the door. Mm-hmm. A lot of times folks come in, their spouse brings them in, their child brings them, their employer brings them. And that's very exciting. And what mm-hmm. it means is that the community not only supports the council, but the community also helps people access what
right.
we do.
I can only imagine that these people who take that step to reach out to you for help probably have a much higher success rate when they have a much larger support system.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. They can't do it by themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's like anything else, right?
Even
weight loss. It's always easier when you hold yourself accountable with a friend or a partner or someone. You say, okay, here's my goals.
Totally.
Hold me to it. Cheer me on, but also remind me when I go to reach for that thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is standing in the way of your success. And I would see this applying, you know, even in this situation.
100%. And it's really cool when we watch, especially young people bring their mm-hmm. parents, you know, to us, or when, you know, when a person's friend from church brings them to us, it's really cool. We sit in the intake together, and it's really, you know, a lot of what we do is really that kind of social work as well. Mm-hmm. Inevitably, in the process of teaching these folks the skills that they've come to us to learn, we learn about other needs. And so the other cool thing we get to do is we get to connect them
right.
to Career Source. We get to connect them to Interfaith Emergency Services. Mm-hmm. We get to connect them to United Way. And then those organizations bring them to us. So in addition to our donors and our supporters, the nonprofit community here in Ocala is, I've never seen anything like
right.
it. I mean, there's this sort of silly idea that we're out there competing for dollars. That is not how it feels to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, And the first people to show up at every Literacy Council fundraiser are our friends from Kimberly Center and our friends from Interfaith and our friends from the Riley Arts Center, right? Mm-hmm. Like, our nonprofit colleagues and brothers and sisters are always at the door ready to support. And that's really good to see.
It's so cool to me to see all the different organizations, like you said, how they can work together. You know, one of our biggest partners through Family Times Magazine is the Early Learning Coalition.
Awesome.
Love, love, love the Early Learning Coalition. In fact, they're going to be here next week doing a podcast with me.
Good.
So we're going to get a double dose of organization success right here. So I love the fact that they're trying to be proactive and catch these young people and out the gate, give them the foundation that will make them successful. Because wouldn't it be great, RJ, if one day you didn't need to be on the board of the Literacy Council?
100%.
There were no Literacy Council because everybody was proficient.
Yep.
Wouldn't that be best case scenario?
That's right. And that's our vision. Our vision statement at the council is an inclusive and equitable community where everyone knows how to read, you know, and I know that we can get closer to that. Mm-hmm. The Early Learning Coalition, by the way, I'll tell you, they did the coolest thing for us. Speaking of partnerships, when Cody was over there, you're familiar with the internet meme, how it started, how it's going.
Yes.
So members of the Early Learning Coalition brought in their favorite childhood book. And then the book that they're currently reading on their nightstand. And they did a How It Started, How It's Going. And it was just the coolest. It was the coolest gesture. And I said, God, guys, this is so generous. And they said, anything that gets people reading.
Absolutely.
We're down.
Absolutely. I love any advocacy for reading.
Yep.
Obviously, publishing a magazine, I'm a big proponent for reading. Read magazines, whatever it is, just keep reading. Knowledge truly is power. We can unlock the potential for anything by learning, and learning really comes through reading. I mean, it comes through experiences, and there's a lot of things we get vicariously. But when you really want to know something, it's why when you're in school and you have a paper, you have to research, and that requires reading.
That's
reading.
Right.
And so I just love that there's book clubs like the one that you promote, and we have the free libraries all around the community where people can pop in and grab a book and not have to pay for it. It's there for free.
Yeah.
Read it, bring it back, swap it out. All the opportunities that we have to make reading and books accessible to people, to me, says that our community is really invested in the idea that knowledge is power, and we want everyone to be empowered in our community.
I think that's absolutely right. And the only wrinkle I would add to that, and this is something that I'm still wrapping my head around, is, you know, there's this idea that what we do is important because it just is, right? So that's this is a good thing to do because it's a good thing to do. And one of the things I'm really starting to understand as I sit with this work longer, and I think that really resonates in this community particularly, is, you know, we're a pro-growth community. We're a pro-business community. You know, we believe in the power of a free market economy, right? A whole bunch of things I may not have said quite as vehemently even a few years ago, that living in this community has helped me understand the power of local business and what companies can do, all of that stuff. This literacy issue has very serious economic consequences, right? So I think the other thing that our community, there are a lot of people who support us because they think it's the right thing to do or a good thing to do. But I also have some folks who are behind us because they believe in a robust economy, and they understand that we as a workforce are going to have a hard time moving forward if our workforce is functionally illiterate.
Right. And, you know, I think it's nice when people who may not know exactly how they can help the Literacy Council but step in some way. William Taylor, who owns Combined Insurance Services, he's the gentleman who had given me the opportunity inside of Family Times Magazine. You guys will see it in the June-July issue. We're very excited about the issue. It'll be out right before school's let out for summer.
Yeah.
So it hits those backpacks. And William is just this remarkable person who wanted to not only support the magazine by placing an ad inside of the publication, but wanted to then dedicate the ad space to helping other small businesses and organizations by giving that advertising space away to them while he pays for it. And so in this particular issue, he said, listen, I'm sure there's a nonprofit or some organization that you're passionate about, you know, stick them there in that page. And so when I had reached out to you and then got back with him and said, hey, you know, I've talked to RJ, we're going to use that space for the Marion County Literacy Council. He was completely for it.
That's awesome.
Very supportive of it. Thought it was a great idea. And these are just the things that are so awesome about our small community, is people truly are looking for ways to help other people.
Yeah. I mean, and that right there, that's that spirit of generosity. I mean, it's I get verklempt. I mean, it's like the thought that someone would support the magazine and then give that advertising away to an organization that maybe is less able to afford it, mm-hmm. or that could benefit from that kind of exposure. I mean, and I'll tell you, and I'll say to him through this podcast, someone is going to find us because of that advertisement.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm just telling you, right. Someone is going to find us. Or that person who's had our card on the windshield for 2 years is going to see that ad and it's going to make sense, or whatever it is. I know that we're going to help somebody because that's mm-hmm. there, and that's how we work. Yeah. That's how we work.
That's what gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, yeah.
Those types of moments, because yeah. you're right. I mean, someone thinks it's just as simple as saying, you know, here's some money, here's some ad space, here's free billboard, whatever it might yeah. be, without really thinking about the life they are about to change.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. It's the coolest thing. And I'll tell you a related story that just, and this is from one of our students. Last year, a student came in to enroll with us for adult basic literacy, which meant that this person was coming to us to essentially learn their ABCs with his daughter by his side. And we charge a $40 registration fee for our services at the Literacy Council. And the reason that we do that is we want folks to have skin in the game. Mm-hmm. We want them invested in their education. Of course, if someone can't afford that, we work with them. But we are not a hand-out organization. We are a hand-up organization. And with that $40 registration fee, they receive unlimited services for the year. So we feel good about it. We had a gentleman come in with a $50 bill. We weren't able to make change in the moment, and he looked across the counter and he said, just make sure that $10 helps pay for the next person's registration wow. fee, right? I mean, it's like that kind of stuff goes yeah. on all the time.
Yeah.
And so we're like a little factory of human goodness over
That's
there.
Right.
It's really cool stuff.
No, it is. And, you know, sometimes people think, well, if I can't give, you know, $500 or $1,000, then I'm not helping.
Right.
But that story right there is a perfect reminder that
That's
if
right.
you have a person that needs $40
That's right.
to forever change their life, and a
That's
person
right.
only has $5 to give,
That's right.
give the $5.
That's right.
Because
That's
that
right.
is still putting another person very close
That's right.
to achieving the goals that could change their life forever.
And I would even say, too, give the $5 or share the post.
Yes, yes.
Or attend the event. Or whatever it is, right? Accept the poster and put it in your storefront window. I mean, there are so many mm-hmm. ways to help. And this is not just for us, it's for all of our colleague nonprofits.
Right.
There are so many ways to help. I always say time, attention, and care,
yes.
right, are our most valuable resources. So
Absolutely.
For folks who can't write that check for $50 or $100, that's okay. If you want to help, reach out to us and we will find a way. I know you saw this the other day, Junior League.
Oh my gosh.
Junior League showed up at our door one weekend and completely transformed our outdoor space. It was a complete disaster. I was sort of hesitant to ask for help,
right.
But I really needed it. So here I am leading the Literacy Council, afraid to ask for help.
Right.
And these women with their kids in wagons behind them came and in 2 days completely restored to us our outdoor space. And just yesterday I saw people sitting out there tutoring. So again, it's like over and over
women.
And over. It's unbelievable.
That organization transforms spaces that really provide opportunities for so many people to flourish and thrive and be active and engage and be social. And I hope that they know the impact that they've just made to your organization just by providing a space that feels good to sit in.
Yeah. And I wrote to them and I said, thank you for the space, but also thank you for reminding me of the thing that I spend every day reminding other people of, which is it's okay to need
help.
It's
okay to need help.
You know?
Absolutely. Where can people find information about the council?
Yeah, so we're www.marianliteracy.org.
Okay.
Sometimes people get confused and they use literary for literacy. So it's LITERACY, marianliteracy.org. Our website is a great place to get information, but also we're located really central, right downtown across from the downtown post office. So
yeah.
people can also pop in, request information. We have all of that stuff available. So
I love it.
Yeah,
people
absolutely.
Should follow you on social media, because like you said, if they can't give a financial donation towards the success of the organization, clicking share takes 1 or 2 seconds.
It does.
But it could really make a difference, because you don't know who's on your friend list
that's right.
really struggling.
That's right.
And they may see that come across their news feed, and that may be the very thing they needed to see to change their life forever.
That's right. And again, this doesn't always look the way we think it looks.
Right.
Right? I mean, this gentleman who worked with his son, this is a prominent person and a successful person mm-hmm. in our community who just didn't get this credential and had always wanted it.
Right.
And then when I became involved, there was that connection, right? But that sharing, that word of mouth, that kind of advocacy mm-hmm. goes a really long way.
Yeah. This was such a feel-good podcast. I'm so glad that you came.
I'm so thankful that you asked. And again, for all that you do to amplify the signal of our work, I mean, it really, really means a lot to
me. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for being here today. I want to thank everyone that tuned in and listened. You know, you can do your part by even just sharing this podcast and encouraging others to listen to it so that they can better understand the needs of our community and how those needs are being met by the Marion Literacy Council. RJ, thank you again for being here. You guys can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. We encourage you to do that. That way, every Friday morning, podcast just like this one will land in your lap and you won't miss a thing. So I want to thank everybody at the council who works so hard. You're one employee. I can only imagine. Yamela,
she's an absolutely, I mean, nothing happens without her. She's extraordinary. And we're going to get her, we're going to get you some support soon. Yeah,
that's fantastic. So thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah.